Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to A Journey of Transformation Empowerment. You're listening to Antonio T. Smith, Jr., where ideas ignite, change, and possibilities are endless. Before we dive into today's episode, we have something special for our listeners. Today's podcast is brought to you by a groundbreaking book that's reshaping the conversation around Black economic empowerment. It's Resegregation, Volume 1,
The Power Matrix,
a master plan for Black group economics with wealth creation, authored by visionary Antonio T. Smith, Jr. Antonio isn't just an author. He's a former top secret combat special operations intelligence sergeant turned millionaire. His life work championed the economic autonomy and wealth creation within Black communities. In this seminal work, dedicated to teachings of Dr. Claude Anderson, Antonio outlines a comprehensive blueprint covering critical sectors like finance, technology, manufacturing, and more. He blends military discipline with acute understanding of systematic disparity. This isn't just a book. It's a movement, a call to action to create lasting wealth and reshaping the economic narrative. Antonio's vision is clear: drive a significant shift toward Black ownership and control. Listeners, if you've ever wondered about innovative strategies for wealth creation or how technological transformation can uplift the Black communities, then this book is for you. Join Antonio Smith, Jr. on the transformative journey. Pick up your copy of the Resegregation Volume 1, The Power Matrix, today, and be a part of the reshaping future. Now, let's dive into the episode and explore the possibilities that await us.
Welcome to the Secret to Success podcast. I'm so excited to have each of you today. Today we have a special guest, Mr. Bill Perkins. I have seen a lot about you. I've done my research, but before I say anything or start asking questions, I would like to ask you to tell our audience all about you.
All about me. I'll give you the shortest version I can. I was born in Jersey City, New Jersey. Okay. I went to school at the University of Iowa. Played football at the University of Iowa, was mainly on the bench, had a degree in, graduated actually after leaving college, but I have a degree in electrical engineering. And I went east to serendipitously start my career in commodities, working on the New York Mercantile Exchange. From there to Houston, got married in Houston, had kids, got successful in my field. I have one stepson and two daughters, and I generally hate onions. I don't know. What else can I tell you? I hate onions, you know. I'm 51 now. I'm getting up there, and I'm pretty blessed. I've had a pretty good ride.
Awesome. Thank you very much for introducing yourself to us. So my first question is, what brought you from Jersey to Texas? What made that shift happen?
So at the time I was a broker and I really wanted to be a trader. And during the period of deregulation, when energy firms in Houston were looking for expertise in derivatives, options trading, basically what I had been learning in New York, there was this like huge sucking sound. You know what I mean? Houston sucking professionals down from the East Coast. And, you know, originally I was like, I will never move south in the Mason-Dixon line. You know, I had all the stereotypes of South, right? But I was at a point in my life where I was willing to take any risk possible that I could possibly stand in order to pursue my dreams of being a trader.
Okay. So now that you've been down here in Houston, you have done quite a bit, from being a best-selling author.
Well, not yet. Okay. Not best-selling yet. We get ahead of ourselves, but you know, from your lips to God's ears.
So from authoring your book to your poker to your business, how is everything going today? How has success been for you as far as today?
How's everything going today? I think, you know, most of my career, I was so focused on a number, like a metric, a number of success was a number, right, that I was striving to. And, you know, doubt about that, you know, had been with me throughout my life in various forms. And so, you know, what's the point of the money? What am I going to use it for? You know, I had like these cartoon type ideas of what a rich guy would do. So I would do these like what I thought rich guys should do. And I was like, this isn't me. Like, you know, like, and so, you know, the best thing about success and how I measure success is like the ability to like have an impact and move about the world and have choices. And most of the impact is, you know, internally, people always put up family, and I'm no different, like with my family, and provide and be, you know, that insurer of last resort for them, you know, that security and stability, which we all search for. But then also options and freedom. And one of the things I had trouble with is once I had those options and freedoms, I didn't really think about, or I was disconnected from my younger self about what I really wanted. You know, I was so caught up on the mechanism to get to this number without, you know, I kind of left behind, like, why am I doing this in the first place? So, but now I'm much more in touch. I take the time to pause and get off autopilot and think about what does success mean for me, and how do I want to spend the limited resource that we have called time.
Time is definitely limited. And from what you just said, it actually brought up two questions for me. My first question for you is, as an entrepreneur and a family man, how were you as a father and a businessman able to not necessarily balance, but incorporate the both to have a wonderful environment for both you and your family as an entrepreneur and a father?
Well, let me first say that I'm pretty sure I got it wrong a lot of the time, right? Like, so I don't want to come off like, hey, I got it right, and I just rode that bike straight, no wobbles. No, that didn't happen. You know, as an entrepreneur, when you're building, right, you have this goal, and you think, if even though I'm sacrificing time here, and you're trying to balance out your day, like, do I spend an extra hour working on this project or thing or trade, or do I spend time and play Barbies with my kids or whatever it is, you know? And you're thinking, well, you know, entrepreneurs so driven, so focused, and sometimes on autopilot are thinking, this is better for my kids overall. This will make their, you know what I mean? I'm providing for the family, I'm providing for their future lifestyle, et cetera. But sometimes you get that dead wrong. And there's more value in just spending time with your kids playing Barbies than the project, right? And I talk about that in detail, but you know, you just keep going. The way to not fall down when you get out of balance on a bike is you have to keep pedaling, right? So you might have got it wrong, you might have wobbled, you might have completely, but you just keep pedaling and you're able to keep your balance. And so I've revised, and you know, I generally think I can never get it perfect, but I'm always trying to, you know, get it right.
Well, first, happy late Father's Day to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
and thank you for your transparency as well. When we have interviews with, when I interview the ladies, I always ask them, well, how did you balance this and this? But I've never actually asked the fatherpreneur,
yeah,
your perspective of it, because as Antonio is, he's very driven, and I see him do everything that he does, but I've never just actually sat down and was like, Antonio, how do you do all this? And so thank you very much for your transparency, and I hope you, what you just shared with us helps other fatherpreneurs as well, because you guys don't get the props you deserve at times, because you as providers, fathers, you guys do a lot. So thank you very much for your transparency.
Thanks for saying that. Yeah, you know, it's just a pursuit, right? You never get there, right? Like, so, but
look, I'm new in it. I'm still like, okay, what do I do now? Because mine is 5. So
it's still,
thank you very much. There was something else that you said as well. You said towards the end, you were like, you know, sometimes when I pause, how has pausing played a role in your success today as a father, as an entrepreneur, author, film producer, poker player? How has pausing affected your life?
I think when I take a pause, you know, a lot of times you're like, get it, got it, go. And you just go on autopilot, right? I go to work, I check in, I do whatever, I do the thing, I drive home or whatever. And on different areas of life, we tend to go on autopilot without correcting course, right? And so we may go too far down that path, or we may get off course a little bit because, you know, our goals should be changing or the times are changing, et cetera. And taking a pause is kind of like, let me take stock of what's going on, what's working, what's not working. Let me get off autopilot and kind of like really figure out, you know, what I need to be doing. What do I really want to be doing? You know what I mean? What do people around me, my loved ones, want me to be doing, et cetera? What do they need? And are they aligned with my priorities? And it's very, very easy to, for me, and I think other people, to get stuck in like autopilot, not check in, and have basically your actions really diverge from your priorities or your goals, right? Because they were set so long ago, right? And set in motion, and they were right at the time, but as time goes on, they may not work or may not fit, or maybe calibrated incorrectly, and now you're like, oh wow, where did all this time go? I could have spent time with my kid. Now they don't want to spend time with me because they're teenagers, or you know, that type of thing, right? Or what was I doing working so much on this project when my industry was heading this way? You know what I mean? And I didn't really stop to like reassess what was going on. And so that pause is kind of like a mirror. Everybody has a mirror in a house, right? They all need feedback, but it's a more personal, introspective mirror of you holding back about what you're doing, what's going on, and so you can correct. So in times of my life when either I had the involuntary pause, which happens, right? Like sometimes, you know, you're on a pot of so long, then life will just, you know, slap you and pause for you, right? And you prefer, you know, my dad used to say, you know, some people learn the easy way, some people learn the hard way, and some people never learn. I'm a hard way learner. You know what I mean? Life has to slap me a couple times, you know, but it's better than never learning at all. You know, the easy way is to learn from other people's mistakes, do the processes you read in books, you know, those type of things. Occasionally I do it the easy way, but those pauses have been, whether involuntary or voluntary, they have been great.
Awesome. Thank you. I really do appreciate your transparency. I when you said what you said about what your dad said, I sat here, I was like, oh yeah. I was, my dad my dad was always the one. He said, why do you always have to learn the hard way?
Yeah.
So why are you my kid that has to learn the hard way? When I just look at him like,
we're hard way learners. We're experiential hard way learners. We need to touch the hot stove in every department.
Every, like, oh, okay, that's not, don't do that anymore. And you just saw somebody touch it.
Yeah, we could have learned from that guy's burnt finger, but like, no, we got to burn our fingers ourselves.
Like, it's not going to burn mine. It burned his because he didn't do it right. That's why it burned his. He didn't do it right.
That's us, right? But
I'm now in my late 30s learning how to pause and look at someone else's mistake and be like, okay, don't do that. Got it. Let me go over here. Yeah. But it took a moment to get there. It really did.
Yeah.
So my next question is how did you shift from trader broker to film producer? Where did that come in?
Well, it wasn't a shift per se. It was kind of like, you know, earlier on in my, like, what do you want to do? Right. Just kind of like how you saw the world. Right. This is like a young 17, 18, 19 year old, how they see the world. So you can discount it as much as you like. Right. But my idea was essentially that, you know, as capital is a lifeblood of business, the business of movies, it's the same. The businesses of almost everything, having capital, having money is the lifeblood. Right. And that if you had the capital, you can go into any field. Right? If you have enough money, you want to start a hospital, start a hospital. You have enough money, you want to build a rocket company, start SpaceX. You know what I mean? Like, if you have the capital or have the ability to raise the capital, right, you'll be able to go into any field you want to, right? And so instead of taking the route of, I'm going to go to
stress, sleep, recovery, whether we're in the gym or at work, these things shape how we perform. I know I have a combination of both stress and sleep. When you're running a multi-million dollar company as the COO, your stress levels are high and your sleep is pretty minimal. You lay down at night, but you have work on your mind and it's going and going and going and you can't quite get to sleep. And then once you get that comfortable position and you doze off, your alarm clock goes off and it's time to wake up. And then I wake up exhausted because I really didn't sleep. I wake up not ready for the day. My alert level is extremely low, and it's really hard to have a productive day when you're in that type of physical condition. One thing I've added to my daily routine, and it's helped make a noticeable difference for me, is NuCalm. See, when I first got my NuCalm and I went in and I set it up, it was an easy process. Uploading the app, getting everything together was so easy to do. And then when I used it that first night, I noticed that I actually got a little more sleep than I normally got. My mind was a little calmer than normal. When I woke up the next day, I had more alertness than I had in a while. And I was excited and I was ready for the day. And I had a very productive day because I was able to focus. And now I have more alertness. I'm not falling asleep during training because I slept at night. My nights have been extremely wonderful. My mind is calm, so my body is able to rest because my mind isn't going. And it's really helped me because I know at night I need to go to sleep in enough time so I can put on my NuCalm and I can have enough time to rest and then wake up alert and ready to go in the morning. And I wake up earlier now than I used to before NuCalm. See, it's imperative to your health and happiness to be able to manage stress and not be managed by it. And NuCalm gives you the power and control to relax and recharge anywhere, anytime. You can own the day with NuCalm. The whole process is easy to use and to work into your daily routine to achieve better sleep, reduction in stress, and boost in recovery. So do what I did. Own the day with NuCalm. We have a special link set up specifically for our Secret to Success listeners. Go to successnucalm.com and get 50% off your 30-day subscription of NuCalm and their money-back guarantee. That's successnucalm.com. successnucalm.com.
LA, I'm going to hustle, I'm going to go to film school, you know, I'm going to do this and whatever. I'm just like, nah, I'm going to make a bunch of money. I'm the guy financing the movie. I'm in the movie business, you know, that kind of mentality, you know, with everything. And so I felt like if I could go into a field that leveraged my time, then later on I'd be able to spend my time the way I wanted to. Right. And so I went into finance commodities, not because it was like, this is the coolest job ever and I want to do it, but it was a means to an end. Right. And so movies were something that always kind of fascinated me, the creative process, making movies, et cetera. And so one of those things when I was like, oh, I'm a rich guy. Rich guys should make movies. Let's make a movie. And so I guess kind of got into it. This is very expensive business hobby thing. You know, it's a brutal, brutal business, but you know, you get a lot of value out of creating something that wasn't there, even when it's a bad product in the end. Like, even if it's like, oh, that movie is terrible, like you still have to make a bad movie and a great movie. It's the same amount of work, right? And the same process, writing, production, filming, editing, cutting down, marketing, et cetera, whether it's financially successful or not, you're going to go through the steps and you're going to learn a lot. So I really, really enjoyed it, but it was something that if you said, oh, how did you transition from trading to movies? It's like, well, trading was just like, how do I get money? You know what I mean? And then how do I do all these other things? So it really wasn't a transition. It was kind of like, now that I had enough money to like, okay, I can risk this amount of capital in a movie project, I started doing that. I started pursuing the things that I loved, or just trying to discover it, because I didn't know if I was going to like it or not. You know, you do it and then you're like, it's a love-hate thing. You know, it's like, it's a lot of fun. It's creative, et cetera. And it's also brutal, you know, so. And I went back for more punishment like 9 times. So there you go.
That's funny. Oh, man. You said something. You mentioned the word freedom. And one of the things that Antonio has always taught us is, what is your why? Is your why strong enough? And I just recently realized that my why is the freedom to be able to do whatever I want, when I want, how I want it. What has been your why this entire time? Like from the childhood to today, what has been your why that has just kept you driven? And has it shifted any throughout the years?
Yeah, it definitely has shifted. I think the why is the same as freedom, optionality. You know, you grow up, you go to the movies. I'm a kid of the 80s. You know, you see the quote unquote rich guy, right? And it was never like a black guy like me. Right? It was a white guy who looked like he could be the president. Talk like this. You know what I mean? Like, but,
the 5 o'clock shadow.
Talk like this. Yes, I think we'll go to the Hamptons. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like a Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island. If older people might remember that. But when Wall Street came out, you know, it depicted these cool events and places to go and travel without worry and clothes and cars and girls, of course, right? Like nothing. Okay. A guy going into industry more than there's girls. You know what I mean? And so, so you know, that kind of idea of like, wow, this is a great, wonderful planet and you can maneuver and walk about it if you're, you know, much easier, much more easily and have more experiences if you're very successful financially, that really appealed to me. You know, that level of freedom of traveling and meeting and solving problems. It's not only just completely hedonistic things. I mean, there's also value in doing charity. It makes you feel good. But like, you know, there's a starving village over here. You can solve that. You know what I mean? If that means something to you. You know, bail reform and there's people locked up. You want to bail them out? You can bail them out. Like that type of thing that you can solve some of the world's problems. Like, so convert your talent in one field into a talent in another, right? Via the transit of property of money, right? Like you just buy the expertise of other people to solve it, right? And so that whole concept really resonated with me, right? That idea, that type of freedom, and that ability to make an impact.
Awesome. That is that. Antonio always says that success, prosperity, has its own language. And the entire time you're speaking, I'm like, yep, Antonio's right. Because I hear you talking, you were talking about the freedom, but also the freedom to help others, the freedom to be able to go over here, but also the freedom to say, oh, there's a village over here in need, let me go help. So with that being said, how important has the service of others been to your success?
I think, you know, the way I define success, I wouldn't be successful if it wasn't a part, right? Like by my definition, right? You know, this ride called life that we go on, like, you know, that's that question of balance, like all the crazy stuff you want to go, your glow sticks in the club, you're traveling, you're hiking in Mount Kilimanjaro or Everest. You know, those are all great, wonderful experiences and shared experiences you want to have with your friends and close loved ones. But, you know, I would like to make the world just a micro bit better than when I was here, or at least not leave it worse, right? Hopefully. Right? I think, you know, when we look historically at successful figures, we don't really celebrate the richest man 23,000 years ago, right? We celebrate people that have massive impact on society or culture in a positive way. And so I think if you look at your life from a historical lens, zeros in a bank account will never, you know what I mean? It'd be like kind of like, I mean, he was a successful banker, but not like a successful human. And I want to be a successful human.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And that actually brings me to your book, because I looked at your book. I read a lot about what it was like. And within your book, I have a feeling that you are going to accomplish what you're setting out to accomplish. So can you let us know about your book and what sparked you to write it?
Well, I'll take the last question first. You know, I've had these concepts and ideas in my head that I've been debating and talking about with friends over the years. And when I do, I generally get a feedback like, that conversation changed my life. That conversation helped me do X. I'm getting more, better, faster, whatever, because of this conversation. You changed my perspective. And that was very fulfilling to me. And I, you know, the concepts that I talk in the book, I quite literally believe that I'm saving people's life, right? Because, and so for me, authoring the book was like, hey, this is a way to get a message out that people will be able to save their own lives, their own precious resource, the life energy they have, and use it more wisely and get the most out of their life. And I don't tell you how to live in this book. I tell you, based on what you want out of life, how to get the most of it, right? And a process and how to think about it, so that the book's called Die with Zero, so that you die with zero regrets, right? And one of those tools is you basically use your money wisely so that you wind up with zero money when you die, but it's really about dying with zero regrets. And so I wanted to help people achieve that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I believe it was Mr. Les Brown who said the richest place on earth is the graveyard, because nobody dies. Nobody dies with zero. They die with their dreams in them, their goals in them. And so thank you. Thank you. Because not everybody has the strength or personal self-belief to believe that they can do whatever it is they put their mind to. And that's something that I wanted to mention early, because you were saying how when you were a kid, you thought this, you thought that, and you were like, I feel like you still have the mindset of a child in regards to whatever you can imagine. It's like, you know what? I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, oh, why did I choose this? Why did I choose this path? Like, what was wrong? What was I thinking? But yeah, I generally do believe that it's a matter of, do you want it bad enough? Are you willing to pay the cost and the sacrifices and reorient your life to accomplish them, you know? But yeah, I do believe that. And as a matter of fact, I think a lot of my, I tell people, why do you think you were successful? I said, aside from like being right place, right time type luck that comes along and creating your own luck, I had the delusional belief that I could. And I'm like, well, yeah, you were delusional. I'm like, you need that delusional belief to keep you going. That is like, you know, I'm not one of these, like, you know, the secret and whatever and X, Y, and Z and karma, but there is so much power in believing that you can do it, because you will, if it's a Rubik's Cube, you know what I mean? You will try every combination until you get it done. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you need. Like, I could solve this Rubik's Cube, right? Because it's solvable. And then, you know, there are certain things that are impossible that we don't know they're impossible to try, but you need to go through, get through it and fail and then come back and do something else. You know, I've had the, you know, failure is a great thing. It's a great teacher, you know, it's like a great teacher and you don't like it, but it's like, you know, if you come from, we start to realize, I think later on, it's the journey, the destination from a physical standpoint. I don't want to insult anybody religious, right? Like the destination sucks, right? It's the grave. It's tight in there. You can't move. They kind of sew your lips shut. You're all rotten. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And so, you know, you kind of want this massive attempts, big misses, great successes, you know, loop the loops. Oh my gosh, I thought I was going to do this, but now I'm doing that. Here I am, type of ride of life. And so I'm quite okay with failures, even though they hurt. They're supposed to. And I'm more focused on the attempts and deciding what I want to do, what big things do I want, or what small things do I want, and enjoying the ride.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy that you discussed the journey aspect of life, because it took me a very long time to understand that. Going through coaching with Antonio and getting to where I am today, it took me to understand, stop. He always tells us, once you get to the starting line, you've already finished. It's what you do in between the start and the finish that gets you to where you need to go. And it's the, either you're going to stay on track, you are going to go off, there's going to be potholes, you're going to have your ups and downs, you're going to have your peaks and your valleys, but if you just keep moving, you know, and the journey is the best part of the entire trip.
Oh yeah.
Learning from it.
Amen. Yeah, I mean, trophies are anticlimactic. Often they're anticlimactic. Like when you have a football season, you win the trophy at the end, that ceremony is 20, 30 minutes. You spend hundreds of hours in the gym, practice, hanging out with friends, playing games, nail biters, or whatever. That whole process, you need to enjoy. Because if it's just for the trophy at the end, it's not worth it. I can tell you that right now. It is not worth it, right? You have to relish and enjoy the journey, be present, you know, the whole thing, the whole development of whatever project it is, whether it's you're getting in shape and you're playing on a football team or you're building a business, et cetera. That's the juice, right? The check at the end is kind of like, you know, you've been working so hard. And I discussed this in the book. This is what the book is about, is that you've been so busy building. By the time you get the check, you're like, I don't even know what to do with this money. You know what I mean? Like you're out of touch with what you wanted in the beginning, you know?
Right. I think, and that's one of the things that I've learned the most. Like in elementary school, I wanted to be a veterinarian. There's no way that you could tell me that I was not going to grow up, have my own farm with my pigs, my horses, my cows, my dogs. There is no way. And then as I got older,
I am determined to be rich.
The middle class is not for me.
I need news that cares about me.
And not news that's gonna scare me or make me mad at another people group.
I need news without politics.
And I want news that will point me to the money.
This is the news where it happens.
The moments that change the world.
These are the stories we need.
The info that we care about.
We only give you news
that puts money in your pocket.
And the news
that gives us an advantage.
This is the work that continues.
Who we are today.
And what we can become.
Tomorrow.
That's it.
This is where news without agendas can lead us.
Your wealth matters.
This is why more perspectives
make us stronger.
And how our mission can inspire
tomorrow.
This is journalism that helps the world we live in.
This
is
Mexit News.
Older, the journey from junior high, from elementary to high school is like, yeah, I don't even know what I want to do anymore. And then from high school to fails attempts in college to marriage, kids, and today it was like, I just finally was like, okay, when are you actually going to just do what you want to do? Like, are you going to live your life with regret? Are you going to go for it and be like, you know what? It didn't work out, but I'm glad I at least went that route. You know, it's the journey is crazy. And I admire and appreciate those like you and Antonio and others that I've spoken with who have actually been like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to let the model stop me from just doing whatever I want to do. So I appreciate your transparency with us today, and I appreciate you and Antonio and everyone else who have literally just shown us, hey, just do it. You're good.
We don't celebrate the failures and the attempts enough in society, right? Like, and so I love those attempts. Like people like, oh, it didn't work out. I'm like, I don't care to tell them. That's whatever. You know, there's all kinds of things that you could have done something wrong. Outside circumstances could have went wrong, whatever. Tell me about this attempt. Tell me about this glorious thing that went wrong. You know what I mean? And so, you know, and I've had people have glorious attempts and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm really envious of your experience. Some of the experiences that I've been most envious of were colossal failures. they were colossal. Like, it was like, you know what I mean? You know, in part internal things or external, but it was like, wow, you attempted to do this and you got all that and you whatever and the thing and oh wow, oh man, that went horribly wrong, you know? And those are I'm really envious of your experience, you know?
Yeah, because it's
that adventure. They win it, they tried it, they learned, they learned to work. Maybe their interests have changed over time. They don't want to go back and attempt it. But like, that is like, I don't know. We're at this dinner and you got something interesting to say and I ain't got shit to say because this is way more interesting a life than the thing I can talk about, right? Like,
right, exactly.
And I wish I had that story. I can feel it, you know? So.
Definitely. I'm sitting here. Antonio has us reading books about how Instagram got started, how Netflix got started. I'm listening to them tell their story. I'm like, even though that was a drastic fail on that part, but the experience that you had with that is absolutely amazing. And when you think about the experiences, it's like, wow, like you said, the journey, instead of us always looking at, man, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas. What about the experiences that you've had that got you to where you are?
Yeah, I mean, those things that link that causality, those experiences build where you are. But it's also like, if you look at kind of like what I discuss in the book about your life, the arc of your life, and like really you're in the business of the acquisition of memories, experiences, mm-hmm. right? Like how you think of yourself today is part of what's going on right now, but a large part of what has happened in the past of your life, like the narrative of who you are, how you define yourself, or the things you did and didn't do, and the things that happened to you, and that is how you define yourself. Basically, your memories. If I wipe your memory clean, we start fresh, but you have like your intelligence, at least, like of things, you're a totally different person. Totally different reactions, totally different perspective, totally different. And so that those experiences are what life is all about, right? And when you talk about them, like the experiences of your failures and your successes, you don't get to live them once. You get to live them twice, three, four, five, 10 times, because they bring enjoyment when you talk about them. You know what I mean? When you had your kid, his first home run, when you did X, when you told the joke and milk came out your nose and they were laughing, you know. Like when you gather with your friends, I asked an informal poll. I said, what percentage of the time is spent discussing future events or current things or things that happened in the past between either you or your friends? And 75, I think, but the majority was basically this 75-25 past events, followed by 50-50 equal, right? So if, you know, when you retire, you don't really retire in money, you retire in your memories. Anybody who's visited an old parent, it's like, remember that time and blah, blah, blah. It's discussions of the past that keep them alive, that they get to enjoy once again through what I call the memory dividend of recalling those experiences that they invested in. And so that memory dividend is like an interest payment, right, from that investment that you made on these experiences. And so, you know, and that can even happen with bad experiences, right? Like you went, you tried this thing and blah, blah, blah. And the next thing you know, 5 years later, you're joking about it and like, man, I horribly did wrong. I got the accounting all wrong. The thing, whatever, the bank was calling me, collecting on me, thought I bounced the check, almost went to jail. And then you're telling a story, everybody's cracking up, laughing at this, whatever failure you had. And it is like part of your resume. It's like, you're glad you went through it. And not only that, you're getting years and years and years in enjoyment out of that experience through reliving and retelling it. And it becomes radioactive too, because you tell it to somebody, they get value out of it, they might tell it, you know what I mean? Everybody, now you're creating a new experience of this great dinner conversation or great lunch conversation or whatever going on. And so I'm very big on experience. And experience is a wide term. It can mean anything. It could be charitable giving. It could be like, hey, I volunteered for the Peace Corps and I built wells and, you know, Zambia, wherever, right? It's very broad, but the experiences you want to have is kind of like getting off autopilot, deciding what they are, and just going for it, mm-hmm. and realizing that by investing hard in those experiences that you choose to have, you will get dividends.
So, in discussion of experiences, what has been the greatest experience for you?
Oh, I mean, it's always like the birth of my first daughter. It's just kind of like overwhelming thing, you know. But I know everybody was like, ah, come on, don't give me the parent answer. Like we've heard that 1,000 times. Tell me something outside of that. I think the experience, you know, when I first went on the floor and decided to move to Houston, I think like that kind of period of where I was like really adamant of moving to Texas. Like I had all the stereotypes of like, they don't lynch me or whatever. You know what I mean? Like cowboy, Mason-Dixon line, you know.
Yeah.
Like Houston, like why the hell, and from New York City, like why the hell would you ever go, you know, that type of thing. And I just packed up, got an opportunity and was out the door. Like didn't know a soul here, moved here, you know, created new relationships and friendships. The totality of that experience of like, I am going for it, right? That rate of change and that rate of like risk and that exhilaration. I think that was, it was like one of the best experiences of my life, you know, that time period, you know, that I can accomplish it. And then, you know, losing money, getting fired, getting broke, getting unbroke, you know, that whole roller coaster of success and failure, but trying in that upward trajectory was a really, really great experience. Which, you know, when I get together with my friends and they talk about, oh yeah, remember you had to sleep on the train because you couldn't afford, you know, the train fare and you didn't want to hop the stall, you know, like it's quasi sucked. Actually, it didn't quasi suck. It sucked at the time. But I had purpose and I was driven and whatever. And now it's like, one of the better stories, right? Like I have all these stories of making it, doing well, screwing up royally, you know what I mean? Getting smashed down, making mistakes, coming back, you know, the whole juice of life. And so, that ride was a great experience.
Awesome. So you started off by saying the greatest experience was the birth of your daughter. Your first daughter, what is the one thing that you want to leave for your children?
Oh, wow. I always say that my job is to prepare them to navigate the world, so them to be strong, confident, independent thinking women with compassion, right? That they can navigate the world. And then it's like, doesn't matter what I think. It's like, F you, Dad, you lived your life, I'm gonna live mine. That's kind of the way I want it to be for them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, because a lot of parents like, I want my daughter to be the doctor or the thing and whatever. I have that too, right? But if I can leave them with that, right? That sense of compassion and forgiveness, integrity, the ability to navigate their world, the ability to adapt, right? Then I feel like I have left them with all they need. And now it's like, okay, what do they want? What are the things they want to do? Let them go on their own adventure, right? And so I would want to leave them with the tools to have their own great adventure.
Awesome, yay. I thank you. Because like you said, most parents, I want you to do this and I want you to do that, but it's good to hear a parent say, well, I just want to make sure that you got what you need to navigate. If you decide not to go this route, I'm okay with that.
As long as it's them making the decision, you know, they're not being swayed by circumstances, but they're off autopilot and they're making the decisions, then, you know, it's their life. You know what I mean? They get one, and I want them to adapt and live it, you know, navigate the world on their own will, you know, of their will, not of mine, right? I'm not trying to control them from the grave or from whatever. I mean, I control. They think I'm over controlling now, over protective now, but eventually I have to like let go. And they're like, "Peace, Dad. I'm gonna go do this." I'm like, "No, God," you know. I mean, your whole life, like when I first had kids, right? And we get the babysitter over. I said, "Listen, your job is to keep them from killing themselves. I'm not worried about like people intruders. I mean, yeah, there's intruders, whatever. But like, honestly, the socket, the eye, you know, your whole life is just a lifetime of worry. Like, don't eat that. Don't whatever, blah. You know what I mean? Then you get to a point where, okay, they're not gonna kill themselves with the electric socket or whatever. And they're gonna buckle. They're gonna get snatched. And do they have street smarts? And, you know, you're just constantly, it's just a lifetime of worry, right? You worry in the womb, whether they have 10 fingers and 10 toes. Outside the womb, you start worrying about everything. You know, the first fever, every parent goes bananas. The doctors are like, oh my God. In an emergency room, they got 103 fever. They're like, will you please just go home and give them some grape juice? Get the hell out of here.
I'm laughing because that was me.
It's so true, right? And so you get this programming that, you know, you're just in this role, right? This autopilot role of dad protector thing. And you got to crack that, you know, you got to step back and be like, okay, what is it I really want for their lives? What do I want them to be able to do? And, you know, step back and be like, okay, eventually it's their adventure. You know what I mean? You're out of it. And they have to have the freedom to take risks, even deadly risks that they want to take, you know? It's like they get to choose their own risk reward, you know? And so that's what I want to leave them with, that ability to do that.
Way to go, Dad. No, seriously, because I'm a daddy's girl, and I only know what he tells me, but I also know what he doesn't tell me. I know he worries. I know, you know, even though I'm grown, I know he still, so it's cool to hear from another dad's perspective in regards to his daughter. So thank you yet again for your transparency.
Yeah.
So my next question is, what got you into poker? Was it something that you decided to do as a hobby, or was it, were you sitting there one day, you're like, you know what, I'm really good at this?
No, I'm actually really, I'm not good. You know what I mean? Like, the world is so much better. I'm okay. But I think I naturally have a risk-taking gene in there. I was attracted to risk. That's why I got into trading and risk for me, you know, a lot of times when I'm coaching my friends or taking them, it's like, I generally seem to be pushing them into a riskier thing. Like, hey, it's not as risky as you think. And actually, you know, traders particularly think of opportunity risk, so opportunity cost, more so than the risk of ruin or loss. So we have like this FOMO, right? Like, what do you mean? I can't afford not to do this. Do you realize how much potential is here, right? If I lose, it's this much. If I win, it's that much, right? So we're always thinking of the opportunity and potential. I poker is just another game of very similar to trading and risk and opportunity. And, you know, I think I'm a little bit of a degenerate. I like, you know what I mean? Like, I like to get lucky. So I got introduced to it because traders are generally, you know, they like to play pokers and relax, playing all kinds of other games of math and skill and stuff like that. And that's how I first got into it. And then I just kind of like the social aspect of it. It's similar to golf, except that you're actually more social because you're sitting at a table for hours with up to eight other individuals, nine including the dealer and the host. And you're having, you know, you're meeting very interesting characters and having very interesting conversations. You know, so that's kind of what got me into it.
Okay. I've always been curious about poker, but never really just stepped into it. But I think I'm going to stick with my slot machines for right now.
This is straight gambling. Straight addiction. Bearable reward at its finest. No.
So, Mr. Perkins, before we end today's call, I have one question. You've been speaking, and I hope that our listeners have been actively listening to what you've been saying the whole time, but what do you believe has truly been your secret to your success?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go back to, I'm going to always normalize for, look, I was, you know, when people point me out, like as an African-American, it's like, you're successful. You just worked hard. You got there. Why can't these other people do blah, 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 right? And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I am the poster child of somebody who should have made it. I was born post-civil rights to both my parents eventually got their college degrees, okay? I was in the East Coast, which is multicultural, in a growing economy, right? So that means I got introduced to many people. My dad was able to put me in better schools. If anybody was gonna make it, it was me. I was very, very lucky, you know? That being said, so in the distribution, you know, I'm one of the guys who fall over here. Okay. That being said, there are other people like me that didn't do it. And I think my father and my family, particularly my dad and his example of his life, with astronomically worse scenario to get to where he was. He was a defense attorney. That delusional belief that it can be done. Because if you ratchet that down just one bit, I don't even attempt half the crap that I've done, right? And so, like, you're looking at the successes, right? But like, let's you know, I've been fired twice, okay? Once by my best friend.
Wow.
One of my best friends, right? And then he rehired me. You know what I mean? I've had my, you know, and each time I was hurt or, you know, worried, but I was undaunted. You know what I mean? I was a little worried, but I was undaunted. I was like, let's keep going. It was like I got my ass knocked down on a football field and got back up and like, this is the game, right? And so that belief and that tenacity and that delusional, you know, that just grand delusion that I can do something big is the big secret. You know, if you know, we often say, like, listen, don't step in the ring if you don't like getting punched. Every boxer gets punched. Most every boxer gets knocked down. May not get knocked out, but at least gets knocked down. Okay. And so, you know, that's part of the game. You're going to get punched. You're going to get bloody. You're going to get hurt. You know, you're going to get a rib shot. You're going to be like, oh, why am I doing this? Ding, get back in there. And so that I think has been the secret, because I can point to many times where things, I could have went the more safe or easy path, or, you know, let me just get a safe government job here, or let me do X, Y, and Z, let me take the cushy place. And I always had the belief, like, I'd rather be scuffed up, broke on the streets than go the safe route. You know, and that being said, I don't want to say I'm a complete badass, because when you really look at everybody's life, you know, if you have, you know, you're not mentally unstable and you have a life, like, you can always get, now you're going to have to check your ego, but you can always get some sort of job that is going to sustain you. You know what I mean? You're not going to be busting on the streets. Like, yeah, do I want to wait at Carlos O'Kelly's, one of the jobs I had for the rest of my life? No. But would it pay me a decent live, and when I ratchet down my lifestyle? Yes. You know? And so, realizing that I could check my ego and work, you know, I could be a garbage man. They got a good contract. You know what I mean? They got a union, you know? It's like, once I checked my ego and realized there were, and I guess that's secondary, like the delusional belief that's like an egomaniac belief, the delusional belief that I can make it, but also the ability that I could check my ego and realize that if I failed, I will do whatever. You know what I mean? And I will have a different life, but I will have an okay life, and it'll be okay. I will at least have that adventure, you know, of trying.
Thank you very much, Mr. Perkins. I have truly and honestly enjoyed our interview today. I would love for you to let our audience know first where they can find your book, and then how can they follow you? Where can they find your book, and how can they follow you?
Okay, so you can find my book, Die With Zero, on any of the retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the independent bookstores. It comes out July 28th. You can pre-order now, so let's not wait. Or you can go to the website, diewithzerobook.com. That's diewithzerobook.com. If you want to follow me and chop it up in the streets, I'm in the Twitter streets quite often. My handle is at BP22. That's B as in boy, P as in Peter, the number 22. And you can follow me on Instagram. I'm Bill Perkins. Just type in Bill Perkins. I'll pop up.
Awesome. Well, Mr. Perkins, again, thank you so much for an amazing day today. Audience, go thank follow, go purchase. Thank you all so much for listening to us today and on The Secret to Success.
I'm not sure if you already know this, but you're already absolutely perfect. You're already absolutely great, and you're already living in massive abundance. The most important things that you have is not what you have. It's not what you do. It's what you know. Because the people who do know what you need to know to leave the middle class, they're in the top 1%, and they control 96% of the world's income. 97% of this world is trading time for money, and that is not the way to become rich, it's not the way to become wealthy, and it is absolutely not the way to leave the middle class. There are 7.8 billion people in the world right now, and they all want to learn how to make money and how to leave the middle class. But the way to become a master at anything is to learn all the rules and then bend them to your favor. Right now in this world, there are 2,057 billionaires. Right now. So if you think becoming a billionaire is impossible, that's 2,057 people that have already proved that impossibility incorrect. And if you think that's crazy, there are 46.8 million millionaires in the world, worldwide right now. Now think about that. 46.8 million millionaires, and that number grows 1,730 millionaires every single day. Money is everywhere. You don't need to max out your credit cards. You don't need to borrow from granddad and grandma. Just look behind me. Look at all the wealth sitting behind me in this junkyard. It's insane how much money is everywhere, and you don't need to go out there and beg, borrow, and steal to get it. You just need to know the rules of making money and how to leave the middle class. Essentially, all you need to know is the algorithm of making money, the rules of making money. All you need to know is what to do and how to do it, and you can leave the middle class. Any industry, yoga, golf, underwater basket weaving, clipping fingernails, it doesn't matter. All you have to do is know how to do it, how to get it done, and then find somebody to teach you how to do it, how to get it done, and you will be able to leave the middle class. If you're not getting my point, it's real simple. Whatever you have up here, as long as you understand the rules of leaving the middle class, as long as you understand how to get money, you can take what's up here and get wealthy from what you already have. Right now, the very thing you know up here is already being searched 1,000 times a second on Google. Someone right now, actually 1,730 people right now, are gonna become a millionaire from the stuff that you have in your head. Why can't this be you? I mean, it's 1,730 people with your ideas that are no better than you, that are gonna leave the middle class, become a millionaire. Why are you not next? So how do we do this? How do we take what you know and apply it to objective money-making secrets and then allow you to leave the middle class? How do we take you from where you are and let you escape to where you want to go? So how do we make all this money or take all this knowledge from the Warren Buffetts, from Elon Musk? How do we take everything that everyone before you has done, and how do we take all of that and then put it in your head so you can leave a legacy for your family? My name is Antonio T. Smith Jr. 32 years ago, I lived in a trash can. That's right, from 6 to 14, I had no running water, no electricity, no anything, and somehow I'm in the top 1% today. Not because I had the right background, not because I had a silver spoon in my mouth, simply because being homeless made me learn how to make money. I retired when I was 29 years old. I'm more than likely younger than you. I'm one of the top 1% income earners in one of the richest countries in the world. What I learned how to do when I was 6 years old was learn how to generate enough money to eat some cookies so I wouldn't die to death from starvation. From there, I learned how to go from cookies to a meal. From a meal to clothes to shelter to everything else that supplied my necessary needs. When I was six, I was forced to learn how to make money. And now that's what I'm gonna do and help you do. I've seen amazing results. I have my own economy. I've homeschooled my own children. And I wrote a book that teaches you every single thing that I know about making money, every single thing that other people know about making money, and most importantly, all the stuff that we don't tell you. Because the truth is, and you know it like I know it, the most honest, the most hardworking, unselfish people on planet Earth live in the middle class. Yet, your honesty, your unselfishness, your devout religion going self is not enough to get to the top 1%, and that's not fair. The second half of my life has been not about how much money I make, but how I will be remembered from all the money that I have made. And I've been trying to teach everybody how to get out the middle class. I'm the crazy guy, famous on the internet for trying to create 100,000 millionaires. I've created 8 so far. I got a 9th one on the way, all the way from India. That's pretty cool. And what I want to tell you is something very simple. It's been hard. It's been absolutely hard to help people leave the middle class, not because of the people, because the system would rather keep you being someone else's money instead of you having your own economy and having the money come fine and flow to you. It was frustrating because I knew that anybody can make money. And if you knew what I knew, you would change your life. Over the last few years, I built a large following of over 500,000 people every month that pay me to actually, for me, to give them advice. Well, that's been exciting for me. And the cool thing is, I've created thousands of six-figure earners. I've created millionaires. I've created people who can live their dreams and hold on to their legacies. And now my eyes are on you to create you to what you need to be great. I have been teaching my principles and these principles to hundreds of thousands of people around the world, every country, all continents, and anyone who has taken them seriously, written them down, and applied them have a 100% success rate of leaving the middle class. I've taught these secrets to my following and my inner network, and I've watched them go from four figures to five figures to six figures, seven figures, all the way to eight. Everything that I've ever learned, everything I've ever learned from millionaire mentors, billionaire mentors, and everything I learned from being homeless, and everything that got me into the top 1%, I have placed inside of a book. To date, it is the longest book that I've ever written, the most best book that I've ever written, and that book is called The Richest Man in the Trash Can, and I'm offering it to you today for free. This book is going to show you how to become wealthy into the top 1% and leave the middle class. This book is going to give you a step-by-step plan if you're 30 years old, all the way to 70 years old, how to get into the top 1%. If you're a teenager, how to get to the top 1%. If you're a millennial, how to get to the top 1%. It's gonna teach you how to make six figures immediately, teach you how to get to $1 million immediately, and all that good stuff. Plus, I'm gonna give you the 36 objective laws of leaving the middle class. Plus, I'm gonna give you every last one of my secrets that have made me rich. You have to understand that leaving the middle class is the most important fight that you're gonna have in your life. And to be honest with you, you can kind of relate to this. It almost takes $450,000 a year just to be broke in America. And that's just in America. If you don't leave the middle class, which is actually an illusion, then you are gonna have a really hard time. Think about it for a second. Most of you are gonna be watching this are gonna be baby boomers, and you've been sold a bad check. They lied to you. Your retirement was not enough for you to live comfortable, and I'm gonna give you this book for free so you can figure out how to triple your retirement and then quadruple your retirement, and then, as Grant Cardone would say, 10x your retirement so you can live the life that's worthy of you. I want you to remember that leaving the middle class is the most important battle that you could ever face in your entire life, especially for your family. So consider this video, this book, your friendly tap on the shoulder. I want to send you a free copy of this book because I believe that abundance is your birthright. I believe that abundance is freedom. And I believe that this book is right for you. In fact, I believe in that so much that I will send you the book for free. All you have to do is cover the cost of shipping. I'll eat the cost. I'll take the loss. And all you have to do is get the book and dominate your reality right now and apply the principles so you can be the best person for your life that is yours. Fill out the form sitting right there to the right. Go ahead, dominate your reality. I can't wait to send you my book. I can't wait to meet you. I can't wait to have you as someone that's been on the journey with me. Antonio T. Smith Jr., you can plan better. You can dominate.
When the pandemic began, I had the biggest problem in the world. Not making money. The pandemic was actually quite a blessing for me, as it almost made me a billionaire. I came really close. So the pandemic was a blessing. It was hiring people. And get this, everybody. I had 48 job positions open during the pandemic. $22 an hour with paid training. And I could not find a single person for 2 years to fit any of those 48 job positions. Hear me well. 48 job positions, $22 an hour, paid training, and I couldn't find someone, not one person, for those job positions. Now, is it because I hire slowly? True. But it's because I wasn't using ZipRecruiter, and that's a fact. I wasn't getting to the right people for the right position to fit my right culture. And there are so many different things that you can do this summer. As a matter of fact, you can free up as much time as you want to. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're probably not going to free up that time if you're attempting to hire people. So what is ZipRecruiter? What is probably the greatest job finder that's out there? And that's why you need ZipRecruiter. You need it so you can find the right candidates. Now, it's not that ZipRecruiter helps you find jobs. It's more accurately that ZipRecruiter takes your culture, takes your job, takes what you're looking for, and immediately matches them with the perfect candidate. And if they can't find a perfect candidate, they would skip over that person and then give you the perfect candidate for you. ZipRecruiter uses one of its most powerful tools, which is the technology itself, to match the right candidates up with your job. You can easily review their recommendations and easily review their recommended candidates and invite these candidates to apply for your top positions. Additionally, ZipRecruiter has a complete suite of tools that makes it easy for you to filter out, review, and rate candidates. 4 out of 5 employees have been used by 4 out of 5 employers on ZipRecruiter. It is a blessing. And no wonder ZipRecruiter is rated #1 hiring site in the world based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of this year, January 1st. My friends, soak up everything I said. It's not an ad. This is a personal testimony of how I found the right people to sit in the right seat on the right bus. Without ZipRecruiter, it wouldn't have been possible. So how do you take advantage of what I'm talking about? Well, you go to ZipRecruiter.com/B2B, all spelled the regular way. That's Zip, Z-I-P, Recruiter, R-E-C-R-U-I-T-E-R, ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. And I promise you, you will be grateful that you did so. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. It's also in the show notes.